Now, the second speaker on tonight's program is a very charming lady from Riverdale, Loretta Hurley.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Loretta Hurley, and I am an alcoholic. I am a woman who 3 short years ago came to AA and said, never, never in this whole world would I give a talk. I simply couldn't visualize myself in such a position because I still didn't understand what this wonderful, wonderful fellowship was all about. And so my dearest friends in the Riverdale group bided their time. And the time came a short 1.5 years later when the Riverdale group needed speakers very badly. And again they approached me. And this time, although still full of fear, I thought, how could I ever pay back to AA, which I love so much, if I say no again? And I also thought, if you have something that you're terribly afraid of, take it out in the open and face it. That's the only way to get rid of it. And I did that, friends, and am I grateful tonight. I should like at this time, too, to take the opportunity to thank the committee individually and collectively for permitting me this wonderful privilege of speaking to all my dear friends here assembled. I am here, as most of you know, who have been around AA for any time, for 2 reasons. The first and very important reason to me is to maintain, strengthen, and perhaps, if I can, enhance the quality of the sobriety that began at my first meeting in AA 3 years ago. And I have another wonderful reason, and that reason is this. Now, if I have gained anything from AA, and I know I have, in order to keep this wonderful message of hope that was delivered to me 3 years ago, I must give it away. Give it away, perhaps, to someone in this very room who's still struggling and grappling with a terrible problem of alcoholism. I hear many speakers get up in AA and they say, I shall now tell you my story in order to qualify as an alcoholic. My friends, that is not my reason for telling you my story. My mere presence here does that, I believe. But my reason for telling you something of my life is to show you the dreadful progression of this disease called alcoholism. My drinking started a long time ago. It was during Prohibition. That golden, mad, crazy young era when all the world was young and gay. I was a freshman in college at this time, and I had never had a drink. The crowd that I got in with, they all drank, particularly on weekends, and so I joined them. I had led a very sheltered, protected life up until this time. But there was one thing that I found that alcohol did for me. I was very shy with people, quite introverted and afraid of I didn't know what. But once I had a drink, I wasn't afraid anymore. And I didn't realize what a powerful tyrant alcohol was to become in my life later on. So I continued to drink during those 4 years in college and the succeeding 3 years that I spent in law school. During those 7 years, I realized today, from what I've learned in AA, that I was, of course, a potential alcoholic. That slowly but surely this insidious disease was creeping up on me, and that gradually it would get me in its grip and I would think that I would never, never get away again. When I graduated from law school, I met the boy who was to become my husband. And one of the main reasons that I liked him, of course, was that he liked to bend an elbow as much as I did. So after taking the bar examination, which I passed after a couple of tries, I never did anything with my talent, whatever it might have been. I just frittered my time away until 1935 when we were married. Now, for the first time in my life after marriage, I went on the wagon, which I think is symptomatic at least of an embryo alcoholic. Why should I bother to go on the wagon? But I suddenly discovered that I was with child, and I thought it would be a good idea so that this child would be perfect in every way when it was born. So I didn't. I abstained from alcohol for 9 months. But I think way down deep, I really realized at that time, in sort of a subconscious way, what alcohol was doing to me. At any rate, I did abstain, and the child was born. And he seemed beautiful and perfect in every way. Until he was 10 months of age, and suddenly he had a convulsion, which they blamed on teething. Now, when this convulsion would continue and be as many as 20 times a day, I, with a maternal instinct, I suppose I knew there was something deeper than merely a teething spell. So I took him to various doctors, and they told my husband and myself that this child would never develop beyond the age of 1 or 2 years. He would always be moronic, no use to himself or to us in this life. And that was the verdict of not one but many doctors. And so this was the first real tragedy in my life. And I could not accept it. I don't remember if I prayed at that time. I can't recall. But I do know that I questioned the will of God. And I rebelled. And I said, why? What had we ever done that such a terrible thing should happen to us? But little did I realize that if I knew the why of that, I myself would be a deity. After keeping the child home for about 5 years, we decided that we must put him away if we were to continue any normal living together, that is, my husband and myself. But about this same time, my husband contracted what they thought was pneumonia. And in using the usual sulfa drugs, they found they didn't work. They took an x-ray and discovered that he had tuberculosis. And so that was the next blow delivered to me. And when that was delivered to me, I wanted to die. I just ran away from life completely. I thought, this is the end. To whom can I turn? And I forgot that there was always one to whom I could turn. And so when my husband went away to one institution for an indeterminate period and the baby to another for life, I started in 1941 to drink alone. It was at this time I crossed over that imaginary line that we speak of in AA, from potential alcoholic to an actual alcoholic. When my husband returned in 9 months, he didn't notice anything different at first. But gradually he began to find bottles hidden around here and there, and he would confront me with them. And I had no excuse. But I would say, why can't I drink? Why do you even mention the thing to me? Look at all the trouble I've had. And I began to really get down there in that mire of self-pity. It is impossible for me to describe to you what took place during the next 9 years. The progression was real, gradual, terrible, unimaginable, except for an alcoholic. Gradually, my husband and I grew farther and farther apart. I felt that he didn't understand me at all. Poor little me. Look what I had been through. And so finally, when I was really down there in the pit of alcoholism, I thought, my God in heaven, how will I ever get out of this thing? And it was then that I really prayed. I prayed with all my might, but the trouble was that I had a glass of whiskey in the other hand when I prayed. And so my prayer was not answered at that time because I lacked cooperation with God's will. In October of 1949, I determined that I would have to leave this man since he didn't understand poor little me. And so one day I went out for what seemed like a little innocent luncheon, all by myself. This little luncheon lasted for 2 days and two nights. I went to stay with a friend. This friend was a non-alcoholic. She's here tonight. And she, my friend, was the one who called AA and who saved my life. When I thought all hope was gone, she was there. She had never given up on me. My husband had given up, my friends had given up, but she had never given up. And so she called a gentleman whom she knew in AA, and he came and he took me to my first meeting. And what a revelation that was. Oh, if anybody within range of my voice hears me, anyone who's still struggling, who's still terribly sick, believe me, if you want to get well, it's all here for you in AA. I found that out at my first meeting. I found that I did have a real disease, that even medicine recognizes it today as such. I found that it wasn't too gloomy or terrible a business, that I could get well if I wished, that all I had to do was to stay away from one drink, because one drink would build up a terrible compulsion for more, and then more, and there would never be enough. I learned also that I could do it on a 24-hour basis, one day at a time. And in that way, it didn't seem like a terrible procedure. I needn't think of it as a lifetime proposition. I could just do it one day. And all any of us has is today in which to live. Well, it was simply wonderful, and I went out of that meeting. Well, I didn't even feel that I was on this earth. And the same thing went on for 3 months, and I remembered what they had told me. These things that are really the mechanics of AA, the reason how we can get physically sober. But then I stopped in my tracks after 3 months, and I thought, well, where am I? This is simply wonderful, but why do I have to stay here in AA? Why can't I do it on the outside? And then I thought, oh, what is it that attracts me here for? What is it about these people that draws me? What is it that's so magnetic here that I must have? And I realized then what it was. After I spoke to those whom I loved, whom I knew so well in this glorious fellowship, and they told me where to look for this thing. They said, where have you been these last 3 months? It's right there in the 12 steps. Well, I had lived the 12 steps, and I thought I had understood them. But now I started to really study them. And I have found what I wanted in those 12 steps. I found it particularly in the 3rd and the 11th step. To me, ladies and gentlemen, the whole meaning, the whole significance, the whole bulwark of the AA program lies in its spirituality. The spiritual way of life to me is the only way, the only reality. I have never known such a feeling as I've known. The feeling that I want to draw nearer to God. Only since I've been in AA have I known this. I think in all sincerity I may say to you that the saddest part of all my drinking was the loss of God. The one friend, the one changeless one that I thought would never desert me. Well, I deserted him, but he never left me. He has come back. He's come back as he's never been with me before. And it's just because of what I found in this wonderful, wonderful fellowship. In the 3rd step, for instance, I learned that I must surrender my will and my life to the care of God as I understand him. That's a tall order. At first I thought it only meant my will, but to surrender your life, why, that means total self-abnegation, total forgetfulness of self. And I'll probably be working on that one for the rest of my life. And then when I got to the 11th step, oh, that's a beautiful, beautiful one, where we learn through prayer and meditation to get closer to him, to speak to him, not as someone way up there, something far away, something nebulous, but something real, here, present, right in this room. Our changeless friend. I had never known what prayer meant before. Now I know that there is such a thing as prayer without words, and I just sit and contemplate him and think of him. And I know that as long as he stays with me, I will never be alone again. Thank you.